something interesting tonight that I've never seen done. We have no idea how this is going to go. We're going to split this up. So what we're going to do is I'm going to tell you what it was like. He's going to tell you what it was like. Then I'm going to tell you what happened. He's going to tell you what happened. And then I'm going to tell you what it's like now. And then he's going to tell you what it's like now. And hopefully it will not be horrible and disastrous. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. All right. My sobriety date is, I never remember. This is terrible. June 7th, 2009, which is crazy. Okay. All right. So what it was like for me. I had a pretty normal childhood. I grew up very conservative Christian. So I don't know if any of you know kind of like Southern conservative Christian. It was very serious. I wore skirts past my knees. You know, you couldn't show too much skin. It was very serious. And so there were a few things I learned in church. Mainly I learned that I needed to be good enough to earn God's grace, which was awesome. And it was reiterated to me at church all the time. So I grew up knowing that, like, no matter what I did, I was never going to be good enough, and I'd try to be perfect, and there was no way I was ever going to do that. So another thing that's important is I learned from a very young age how to control and manipulate people, especially little boys. They were really fun. So seriously, not a joke. I'm sure no ladies can relate to this, but I learned very early that I have something that they want, and I will use it for whatever I need. That was my first addiction, no joke. That was it. So I learned really early, you know, how to get my way and what to do with that. And so I grew up with this dual personality of like going to church and loving Jesus and then kind of being a little crazy on the side. And as long as I didn't get caught, it was fine, right? So, yeah, see, my people. Oh, thank God. So I'm trying to really watch my time. So a couple of things. I was in a Christian singing and drama group in high school, and we traveled all over the country. And at the time, I really, really was into church. And at the time, I was also learning how to be all the different people that you wanted me to be. So, you know, if I needed to be a perfect student, I would, try to be a perfect student. If I needed to be a great daughter, I would, do my best to look that way. I would, whatever. I learned all the Bible verses at church and, said all the right things. And whatever you needed, I was willing to change and morph and be that person, which, led me to a lot of neuroses, to say the least. And so what I learned in high school first, before I ever took a drop of alcohol, took a sip of it, I learned that you can absolutely, so I didn't want to drink and I didn't want to do drugs because you could see all that outward stuff. And I was afraid I'd get caught and I was afraid I would lose, my good reputation. But I did learn that you can screw around with the deacon's son the night before church and then go to church the next morning and nobody knows. So I started practicing that kind of deception all the time. It was awesome. It was really awesome. Yeah. So went through high school, and at the end of high school, I had a boyfriend, and I really loved him. He was wonderful, and I cheated on him all the time, because that's what I did. Because basically, if I am not happy in any given situation, if I'm uncomfortable, if you don't do what I want you to do, I'm gonna get some sort of fix somehow. Like, I'm gonna get relief in some way. So before I ever took a sip of alcohol, this was my relief. I practiced that all the time. So finally, I didn't have a drink till I was 21. And mainly because I was a judgmental asshole. Really, truly, like, I totally needed to be judgmental. Like, it's illegal. So, you guys, don't break the law. Like, Jesus would not like that. So I continuously, would point my finger at other people and things that they were doing because I could see all their mistakes. And so I could, feel much better about myself and all the little things I was doing behind closed doors. So by the time I actually drank, I had broken up with that boyfriend. I always say that, and it's a lie. He broke up with me. This is what happens when we do inventory. I remember shit like, oh, I've been lying my whole life about that thing. Okay. And still, 6 years sober, and I want to lie. I don't know why. So he broke up with me, and I was devastated. And it's almost as if I was prepared for that first drink all of my life. I mean, all the stuff going on, the discontentedness, the continual, trying to earn God's grace that, and the message I got from people at church, at least at my church, was that, I was never going to be good enough. I could try to be perfect. And there was always the humanity of me. I was always failing in some way, but for some reason, that wasn't all right for me to be human. I needed to be perfect. So all that stuff going on in my head, it was crazy. And finally, I went over to this guy's house because I was really mad at him because he'd lied to me. And he got caught. Like, I didn't get caught, but he got caught, which is stupid. So I was very angry that he'd lied to me the one time. And so I went over to his house, and I was just, like, full of an anger that I'd never felt before. And, y'all, there were a couple of things I learned when I was little, and one was don't cry, don't be angry, you're fine. So my whole life, everything's fine. I'm going to shove it down. I'm going to go cry in my room by myself. I'm going to come out, and I'm going to be fine. Everything's fine all the time, and I love God, and the world is wonderful, and I'm this perfect this, and, you know, it's all a lie. So so I got to his house, and he had some beer in his room, and I was insanely angry, and he left the room. I popped it open, and I'm telling you, not knowing, I mean, this is not a normal first drink experience, not really knowing what alcohol is going to do to me, I started drinking, and I was about halfway through the second beer, and I hate beer, and it was awesome. I was fine. I was really fine, like, really fine. I felt like that actual thing I'd been searching for, that like relief. I could breathe. I was not angry. I thought I was hilarious. I drank all his beer. I blacked out. I don't know what happened the rest of the night. I got home. I woke up on the couch in the morning. I have no idea. That was the first time I drank. It was awesome. So I don't know how most women are, but you know, there was no buildup. There was no social drinking. There wasn't any cutesy Sex in the City, let's have a mimosa thing. Yeah. It was
Cosmos.
It was let's drink all the time. I need to not be lucid. It was totally my solution, completely my solution. So I just started drinking as much as I could, you know, all the time. I ended up dropping most of my classes my last semester of college. That I finished. I didn't finish college. Just couldn't get to them. They were really early. They were really hard. I dropped a one-hour gym class, y'all. One-credit hour gym class. Couldn't make it. It was really hard. It's hard to run hungover. So anyway, I decided I needed to change, that if I left Ohio, which I'm from Cincinnati, woo-woo Ohio, the one Ohio person, if I left there, it would be okay. I could make a change. I moved to California for a little bit. I live with my grandparents who were Christian missionaries, and I really wanted to get back in contact with God and really change everything with the same crazy ideas and without any solution at that point. And that did not work. As you can imagine, it went very poorly. But before I left, I was able to meet this guy, and of course I cheated on him while I was there. But still, we thought that it'd be a great idea and a great solution for me to just move to Kentucky, and then he could keep his eye on me, and everything would be fine. And so I agreed that I wouldn't drink, and we agreed together that we would just not drink, and we got married. It's not a solution, you all. Not a solution. Yeah. So it went okay. The first few years, I did not drink at all. So I had a period of time where I was just completely unmedicated insanity, like completely. I got very into church and very into pointing my finger at everyone else that was doing everything wrong. And I tried to be the perfect wife and the perfect churchgoer, and, you know, it was a mess. So when all was said and done and it started to fall apart, I went straight back to alcohol. And thank God for that, because I really think I probably would have killed myself. So again, you know how we talk about how this disease like just keeps growing while we're just hanging out. And it's true. It was 10 times worse. It was much worse. I drank by myself a bunch. I was, you know, running through friend groups like crazy. People didn't want to be around me. It was pretty bad. And of course with that comes along naked, because that's what I do. Drunk and naked. That's what I do. So I don't think anyone can relate. I like to watch everybody blush, too, because you know it's true. You know it. So that's what happened. It was terrible. So I'm doing things I don't want to be doing. I'm piling guilt on myself, and then I'm drinking to relieve the guilt, and it's just a huge mess. And basically, I dug myself a giant hole and had no idea how the hell I was going to get out of it. And toward the end, I didn't even know. You know, I'd started visiting, like, different hospitals. I started to, you know, get to visit the psych ward, and those were my people too. They were definitely my people in there. And it just, you know, got to the point where basically I thought, you know, I don't think that I can do this anymore. I think I'm going to probably just kill myself and, let it be done. That's how serious I was. So that's kind of where I ended up before getting into AA. So there you go. Do it. No, we don't have the class. It's not done yet.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you, John.
So, yeah, I'm John, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
Yeah, I know. I love you more than you love me. So, thanks for having me come out. New York is amazing. Went to Icky Paw and met a bunch of the cats that I haven't seen in a while, and it's amazing that they're still sober. People have migrated to Louisville and live there, and so New York and Kentucky are pretty tight. There's a nice little crew that are here, and that's pretty awesome that they came out as well. We've got over 60 years of sobriety in our room, which is amazing, and I'm grateful for the friendships today. So basically growing up, my grandmother, when I was first born, raised me up and said, "This is Big Bad John," and I was cursed pretty much ever since that day. Growing up, I had a pretty semi-normal life, you know. I was in the religion thing growing up, a Catholic, and I guess that was kind of normal, except my father, he got struck by lightning and basically went nuts, left my mother, went to California, and my mother packed us up and moved to South Louisville, not far from Churchill Downs in the hood, and lived there ever since. I grew up pretty normally, considering I was raised by my grandmother, my mother, and my sister. I went through Catholic grade school, and my mother had me diagnosed, and I was diagnosed with dyslexia. I wasn't learning at a fast pace like a lot of the other students, and she pulled me out of that school and stuck me into a special school where I felt a little different. But I excelled through that school and I got introduced to alcohol at a very early age. Peppermint schnapps was my first sipping cocktail shot. It was Christmas, and it was nice and warm and fuzzy. And I remember all the white lights glowing and stuff, and everybody's having a good time. And that was my first introduction to alcohol. Throughout my teenage years, there was a nice malted beverage called Zima, where we cut up fresh limes and we squeezed those little gems inside the bottle, or added Jolly Ranchers, if some of y'all might know. Drank those kind of sipping until I started meeting some of the neighborhood kids, which introduced me to, you know, Code 45, OE 800, Mad Dog 2021, that grape drink, and sipping around, you know, riding my bike and hiding behind bushes and drinking and smoking cigarettes was like the thing to do at my age as a teenager. I excelled through that dyslexic school and got into a school called St. Xavier, which is, there's like a rivalry between St. X and Trinity, and it's like the largest high school rivalry in the U.S. And it was an all-male high school, and alcohol was that freedom for me. When I drank, I became dazzling. There was no fear to anything in my life. We had a mixer where, if any of y'all know about, you know, male high school, there was girls at. So I got dropped off and we snuck in alcohol, and next thing you know, I'm dancing up on the speakers and grinding on two chicks at the same time. I mean, just, and that I got my name, like I got my name and people like liked me. And that's when I was sober, I was more standoffish and, you know, not the class clown, but when alcohol was introduced, you know, I became everything that I wanted to be. through that period of high school, I got into junior year, and I was getting out of control at home. My mother decided that it would be good for me to leave the house, so she co-signed my first apartment, where I was pretty much off to the races. I started selling some press, if any of y'all know what that is, some and some other types of marijuana. And that was an income, and I had a job part-time to help pay for the apartment, and I was going to high school. So at this age, I'm already thinking, you know what, I'm a grown man. That's what I am. I'm a grown man. I'm working. I'm doing all this stuff. Next thing you know, my grades plummeted, and they asked me to leave that school that I'd loved. So I was devastated, and my drinking pretty much escalated from then on out. Working these jobs, they came in and gone. And to paint a picture of my alcoholism, you know, we all have pretty much similar stories. But through my life, I'm 34 years old, and I've had 62 different jobs, and 24 different residences. So I've been, you know, on the run. I've left those jobs with 2 week notices. I've quit jobs. You know, I got into some hardcore selling. I did the whole nightlife thing for a long time, bartending and waiting tables. You know, if there's any of those hospitality people out there, you know what I'm talking about. Because it's that cash money. You know, we make that money and we get plowed. And I started getting into the phase of, oh my God, I didn't make any money today, so I'm going to get drunk. And, oh, I made a ton of money. Let's go get drunk, you know. And I had fake ID, you know, when I was 16. So we were going to places like the Toy Tiger and, you know, these old school places that don't exist anymore. The club scene, all that rave stuff. And we did that for a long period of time. And alcohol turned on me. It started becoming a necessity. People started leaving the places that I was being around. They didn't want to have anything to do with me. I started getting these strange phone calls from people. It's like, do you remember what you did last night? And I'm like, no, tell me, you know. And this happened over and over. And I came to a point where I just didn't really care. It was like, you know what, either you love me or you don't love me. And that's who I turned into. It had me in its grips. I served jail time. I've done a lot of tragic and horrible things due to my alcoholism. Towards the end of my drinking career, what basically got me to a point was I was out drinking at 12 o'clock and I blacked out midday. And evidently the person that took me to the bar didn't want to be around me anymore, so he left me there. I found this out 3 days later. But I had found car keys on the bar, found the car in the parking lot, didn't want to be at the bar anymore, drove the Explorer out of the parking lot, and I don't, you know where I was going, but they found me with a vehicle wrapped up next to a tree, and somebody had called, and the people came, and they used the jaws of life, that big can opener, and got me out of that car. I came to 3 days later in full restraints at University of Louisville Hospital. I've got a scar over here on my right eye from that, but I had my whole body was numb, and you know, I could have died. You know, I was very lucky. Through that, that's what they call a felony, which actually got dropped down to a misdemeanor, and I served 3.5 months in CCC, which is like work release program in Louisville. So I got out and went back to the jail after I was working all day, and I did this little technique where you bend over and you spread them, and you know, like, totally naked, and that was like one of the most coughing. Yeah, you got to cough too. It was like one of the most humiliating things in my life, and you know, I went through this next phase, and that was the longest stint of sobriety that I'd had in no telling how long. I mean, 14 years drinking, and when I got out of the hospital, it was Christmas Eve. My grandmother and mother picked me up and said, you know what, we're spending the holidays out of Louisville. We're going to go to Nashville, and we're going to celebrate Christmas. And I'm like, sweet, I could get away from Louisville. I'm tired of eating Zabo's and Blow Up and all this, you know, fun food we eat in jail. And as soon as we arrive in that hotel room, the first thing my grandmother does, she opens up the luggage and she pulls out a bottle of B&B, which is like some yak or some fancy drink that I just didn't care for. But she poured a half a glass, and that moment from that warm feeling and knowing that had vanished all that time that I had served. And I was off getting drunk, wetting the bed. I mean, I was to a bad spot in my drinking. And they were ashamed. I was ashamed of myself. And I went back to Louisville, and I was off and running again. And what happened is an angel basically entered my life. A guy named Adam Stroop. And he was my best friend. He was kind of like an idol. And I was living with this guy and my buddy that was smoking crack. And Adam was on a point of killing himself. He had went through dropping an engagement and an abortion all at once. And he didn't want to live anymore. And I was coming home and drinking to a roommate smoking crack and shooting heroin. And alcohol was always my drug of choice. So that's what I went to. And we moved Adam up to a room for, because he was the guy on the couch for quite some time. And one day he asked me to go to a meeting. And I said, no, I'm not a quitter. I'm not an alcoholic. I know what that looks like. Those are the people under the bridge. Those are the people that are homeless that ask for spare change. You know, I had all these different perceptions about alcoholics. And he was very, very persistent about going to a meeting. So every day, same time, same place, he'd pop open the door and ask me to go to a meeting. This went on for about a month and a half. And I had been sitting in the room one day of the house and just felt the alcohol just drenching out of my pores. And he pops open the door and he said, John, you want to go to a meeting? I have no idea what happened, but I said yes. And I've been sober ever since. So I'm going to go ahead and stop there.
So where was I? Let's see now. So I got to AA because, so I would always tell you that I never drove drunk, that I actually kind of, you know, kept my shit together. But really, I was a blackout drinker completely every time. I have very few memories at all of being drunk. I have lots of memories of waking up places, but I don't remember how I got there or who I was with or anything. So I got to AA because for some reason I had crashed, like not crashed, but I don't know, hit a curb or something and cracked my wheel on my car one time. And that wasn't that bad. Technically speaking, it's a crash. Yeah. And that was expensive and it was frustrating. And at the time I hid my drinking a lot. I very much like stayed out a lot. My husband at the time, he worked opposite schedule of me, so I could go out and I could party. It was not a party, but at all. But I could do what I wanted and we would just cross. But I had to like tell him that I cracked the wheel and I didn't really have an excuse. So that was fine. It was expensive. I got somebody to pay for it for me. So then I did it again. Same fucking wheel. Cracked it again. And I was like, this is ridiculous. And this time I remembered I was driving toward Georgetown, which is about a half an hour outside of Lexington. And I knew nobody in Georgetown, but I don't know why I was going there. I don't know. Who knows? So I came to AA because I wanted to stop driving drunk because that was a new occurrence for me, which is just not true. The lies that I tell myself and then believe are amazing. And I didn't know until I got to AA how many like deep-seated lies I had told myself, how much my perception was off. So I went there. I went to a meeting thinking, okay, I'm going to just kind of sit there with you all, listen to your crazy stuff, and, like, you know, sit with the guy that's homeless and, you know, the really whacked out people, and they'll be way crazier than me, and it'll be fine. I'll be on my way. And I really thought that I was just having a tough time because my marriage was falling apart, so there's an excuse to drink. And, you know, I had all this massive guilt from all the shitty things I do, and, you know, so I needed to, like, stop doing those things. And it just, I just thought I would discount it and be on my way. I thought, for sure, I'm not bad off enough. I didn't drink till I was 21. There's no way I'm an alcoholic. I had 4 years where I didn't drink. There's no way I'm an alcoholic. Like, I wanted to check every box off and be like, nope, 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 I'm good. And instead, I went to meetings, and the best thing ever happened. A group of women came up to me after a meeting, and they were, like, really cool, and they were young, and, like, had their shit together, and they said a few important things to me. They said, whatever you do, you don't have to know anything right now. Whatever you do, just keep coming back. You'll figure it out. Like, AA is a place where you figure it out. That's the first thing you do, is figure out whether you belong or you don't. And I was incredibly lonely. And they were cool. So I was like, all right, I'll just keep coming back. Because for an hour, I could sit there and I could get some relief from myself. And people told funny stories, and you all were way more fucked up than me. So it was really funny to hear your shit. And I'd be like, you know, checking my stuff against yours. And like, I'm fine. I'm still married, technically speaking. And, you know, I have a job still, so it's okay. And I would, again, just go down the list and try to not qualify myself. And I knew, you all, I have some relatives in AA, and I love them dearly, and they've been sober a really long time. And so I knew the best thing about you all, which is that you don't judge people, that it's an open and loving place and all-inclusive. And I did not get that at church, and I had continued to not get that at church for a very long time. So I had this, you know, huge spiritual void, and continued, it's like a freaking insanity, continued to go to church trying to fill that, and instead, you know, that would perpetuate the cycle of guilt. But I walked into AA, and you all were like, whatever you've done doesn't even matter. In fact, it's probably really funny, and we're going to make jokes about it. And, oh, my gosh, you're going to tell people that you've been drunk and naked lots of times. Like, crazy. And I couldn't believe the honesty. I couldn't believe it. I have never in my life been able to be honest with myself or anybody else. I mean, I lived all these different lives so carefully and calculated, and really it's a lucky thing that alcohol brought me down, because I mean, I probably could have done that my whole life and never gotten out of that box and that bubble that I was stuck in. So I kept going to meetings and I kept drinking because it's cool. They told me I could. They're like, you know, you don't have to be sober already to come to AA. Like, this is not what that's about. In church, I always thought I had to like present myself a certain way, and you all didn't say that I had to do that. You said, come as you are. Drunk, sober, whatever. So I drank and went to meetings. I went to meetings really drunk. Some of them I don't remember. I left and drank after meetings. Sometimes I couldn't find meetings, so I went and drank instead. It happened. So, but every time I came back, somebody was always there saying, it's good to see you. How are you doing? Now, the level of dishonesty with myself, I would tell you all, I'm doing fine. Everything's great. How are you? So, and like I said, I ended up in many, you know, some places like the psych ward, where for a few days I sat and told the psychiatrists that they would come in every day. I don't know if you all can relate, if you've been into a psych ward before, if anybody here has. Yeah, I knew my people were here. So they would come in every day, you know, your medical team, and they would sit me down and they would say, hello, Miss Ross, how are you today? And I would say, I'm fine. How are you guys? You doing okay? Yeah. Has it been a busy morning? Yeah, I know. It's been crazy here, literally crazy. Really crazy. And like, I would chat with them. We would like chit chat, and I thought I was being genuine. And I was on a 72-hour hold, so I wouldn't harm myself, because I'd come in saying I want to die, and I had no connection there as to what was really going on. I had total disconnection from reality. So about the fifth day of my 72-hour hold, they said, we're concerned about you because you are not fine. You're in the psych ward and you wanted to kill yourself, and we're convinced you were going to do it. And what is up with you? So finally I said, okay, I think I'm an alcoholic. I've been going to AA. I don't really know what's going on with me. I'm a mess. That was the first time I was able to get honest. Even in AA, I got to tell you, I took 30-day chips and 90-day chips. I took a 90-day chip once because I'd been going to AA for 90 days. So that's cool. Like, that counts. Awesome. I still have that. And many, you know, many chips here and there. I don't even know what I was doing. But I kept going back. So I heard your stories, and I stopped trying to discount myself, and I started trying to relate. And the last few months were really, really dark, because at that point, I had related enough. I knew I was an alcoholic. I just fucking didn't want to be. I was just angry about it. Like, my one thing that was solving everything, that was making me feel okay, or at least making me not lucid and not have to face anything, was something that had absolutely turned on me completely. Like, it wouldn't do that anymore. I overshot the mark so many times, it was ridiculous. I woke up in so many dangerous places, had horrible things happen to friends and myself, and it was a mess, and it was very dark. And so where I got to was a place of wanting to kill myself. So the last bender I had, basically had a panic attack at work because those were starting to happen too, and I didn't connect that with anything either. And drank for 9 days, and at the end, I woke up again, and I was pissed that I woke up again. So I got my ass up, and I went to Starbucks. I got a latte. Just kidding. And I sat down, and I was thinking about how I was going to kill myself. And I thought, this is where it's come to. Like, God can't solve this. And, AA, I tried it. It didn't work. whatever. And, I couldn't see a way out. So I was figuring out the way that I was going to kill myself and how I could just disappear without hurting anyone's feelings. And what do you know? A member of AA sat down next to me. She came to Starbucks, and she was someone I really liked, and she was very cool. She's been sober like a year and a half. And she just, I have no idea what she said. She started talking to me, telling me her story. I don't even know what she said. Whatever she said, it cracked open that door, So I somehow, in that moment, for some reason, got a little bit of hope. And a friend of mine, and I don't know why I'm crying, but a friend of mine, she always calls it the magic. It's fucking magic. Like, one day I was drinking, and one day I wasn't, and there was no difference, you all. I don't know what happened. I mean, if you want to call it grace, I mean, that's the best example. There is no reason why that next day I didn't drink. There's no reason. I was serious about killing myself. And the next day I woke up, and I didn't feel good. It was not fun. It wasn't rainbows and sunshine. It was bad. But whatever you all were telling me, whatever she told me, it gave me the hope. And that's what I needed, just enough to be willing to do something different. So I went to a little detox place, which was really fun, for just a little while. Actually, it was awesome because I don't know if anybody can relate to this, but I got to be sequestered away from everything, and they fed me, and I smoked a shit ton of cigarettes, and I had nothing to do. I went to group and tried to talk the guy into talking about sex every single time because it was really fun, and he'd get all flustered and not know what to do and crazy. But I got that time. I can't even handle it. So I got that time away from it, removed from it, and people from AA came and saw me when I was in there. They showed up, and they're like, hey, we care about you. By the way, we've been caring about you this whole time. And I started to get some clarity. So in the beginning, I was probably the least willing person to actually work steps. I had a sponsor, and I would perpetually show up on a Friday night and be like, I did not do my homework, but let's go to the mall. Let's go shop. Let's talk about what's going on in your life. I mean, consistently. But that first round through the steps was really, really difficult. I am so stubborn, and my disconnect from reality was so strong. I could tell you, when I did my first 4-step, I had, 4 people on it. And then I had 15 that I would take off and put on and take off and put on and take off. Because I had no idea that I was really angry. I didn't know who I was angry at. And mostly I was either blaming everyone else or only myself. So it was a mess, but we made it through it. I did the best that I could, and went through being honest with her completely. I found the person, the one person on the planet that for some reason I could be completely honest with her, and she never judged me. And I want to talk about this too. I had a major, of course, major God crisis, to say the least. I started out, I refused to pray for a long time, and then I had to do third step prayer, and I said, I'm not saying thy will, whatever the hell it says, thy will be done. I was like, I'm not doing it. It sounds like church. I don't want to do it. And she said, okay, well, say it however it, whatever it means to you, and that made some sense. Other than that, I didn't pray other than to say, well, God, fuck you, and we got to get on the same page. And they told me I have to believe in you, so what the hell are we going to do about this? And I would pray that prayer over and over. And then there was a day that came. She had asked me to start asking people about their higher power. And the funniest thing is I landed in this group of old-timers in the morning, and I would ask them about God, and they refused to tell me the details. And I really just wanted to put together a picture of what God looks like. I needed the details. I needed, is he 5'10", and he's got brown hair, and he's, got a southern drawl. I don't know. I needed, the details to get a picture of God so I could pray to that and then, whatever. And they wouldn't. They kept saying, keep coming back. You'll find your own conception. Anything will do. What things do you think are spiritual? What things are good and loving? And, you know, what things bring you peace? And they just refuse to tell me. I mean, they give me little snippets like, you know, if you, whatever you can pray to. So I'll be like, okay, well, pray to the fucking teddy bear. That's fine. So the teddy bear is God. Dear teddy bear, help me stay sober today. You're a fucking teddy bear. But still, it was awesome. It worked. It didn't feel like anything, but it felt different than church, and that was good. So one of the best things that ever happened is the day, I mean, I went through this whole process, and I kept at it, and I kept trying different things, and I kept reading different things, and I read the book, you know, incessantly, We Agnostics. And I finally realized that I'm agnostic. My sponsor said, why don't we start from the beginning? Do you believe in something supernatural? And that was the first time in my life I was able to say, I don't know. I don't know if there's a God or not. And there's a name for it. I'm agnostic. Okay. She said, you can totally stay sober as an agnostic. I was like, this is hopeful. So I live very comfortably in that. I don't have to ask the questions. I resign the debating society. And that was very important in the beginning for me to, like, not ask the stupid questions. I spent a whole lot of my life, you know, learning about the Bible and learning how to defend it. And I was going to definitely, like, talk you down, you know, as much as I could from the Bible. And I don't have to do that anymore. And that never brought me any peace. It brought me no peace at all. It brought me a whole bunch of rules and a whole bunch of guilt. And so as it turns out, too, I can define my own morality. You know, the easiest thing I could get to was cause no harm. So I stuck with that for a really long time, try to cause no harm. And I was unaware of the harm I could cause to myself with certain behaviors. So for the first few years, I refused to do a sex inventory, which was not a good idea. I'm just going to say that now. Do your sex inventory. It's really bad to skip it. So a few years into sobriety, everything was really painful, and I was really sober, and I had continued to do, you know, these crazy things, and I thought, I'm really fucked up. If this is sobriety, it's going to be real rough, and I'm not sure I'm down with that. And finally sat down and did it, and the first thing that came out was some, you know, some stuff that happened when I was a kid. I mean, I learned this stuff so young before anyone should ever learn it. No wonder. I mean, there are causes and conditions and catalysts to our drinking, and that was a major one that, like, I could pinpoint that these things had happened to me that I didn't have a part in, but they certainly set the stage for me to absolutely need a solution. And man, was I, you know, I understand now why I needed to be not lucid, why I needed to not be able to feel. I loved oblivion for that reason. And it helped me understand why I practice certain things with relationships or whatever you want to call them. And it was, you know, it was very telling. So I had like a second sobriety basically with that. And let's see, should I just keep going?
Sure.
Okay, so I'm just going to speed up a little bit. So I will tell you that I have done the steps every which way possible. Any which way, every which way. Like I couldn't go through the steps one time and then just do the few maintenance steps. I couldn't do that. That's not the kind of person I am. It's not the kind of alcoholic.
Another kind of steps to do.
So a tradition study, and then a study with, you know, kind of a twist of woman's way through the steps, which I hated, by the way. It was awful. Anyway, but it was worth, you know, worth something. I've done them all different kinds of ways. I think that's the cool thing about this program. I don't have to, like, you know, it's not very far off the reservation of 12 steps. I've done the 12 steps, which is awesome. But, you know, just last year I learned how to take a fear inventory in a different way and turn some things around that has given me a ton of peace. And I didn't know that that was available, and someone shared that in a workshop, and then I took that and incorporated it in my life. So, you know, over the years I've been able to incorporate the actual steps into things I do. One of the best things that I was able to do was be a good partner in a relationship. And that was amazing. I didn't know that I could be a faithful partner. I did not know that I could let go of certain behaviors and not miss them. I didn't know that I don't always need attention. You know, I didn't know that until I started practicing it. It was weird, but it was awesome. And I continue to grow spiritually whatever way possible. That's another thing that I just do. I try to seek anything. Right now, I'm finding a lot of peace by being out in nature, so whatever, I'm going with it. Meditation is becoming more and more important. I don't really know what I'm doing. I don't think anybody does. I don't know. Kind of sit there and try to clear my mind, and I don't know. And these things are helping, and these things are causing growth. And then I got to tell you, I also grow from pain. Can you relate? Every time. Oh, man. Oh, my God. So my goal in sobriety someday is to be able to see the pain coming if I make a decision and not make the decision and not, like, avoid the pain, basically. But it's not been that so far. So far, I seem to, like, you know, want to try things out that end up being painful. And then I have to grow from it, and then I have to learn from it. And hopefully I haven't caused too much harm to someone else, or I have to make amends for that, or, you know. But the last year has been pretty insane. Not because of bad decisions I made, actually some good decisions I made, and just the fallout from people being people. This relationship ended, and it ended really badly, and it continued to go really badly. And toward the last few months, actually the last 5 months of my life, I've been learning what it means to really take care of myself, what it means to keep myself safe, you know, what it means to lean in to the women of the program and have them be my rock. Jeez, what the crying. I don't know what's up with the crying. Y'all have saved my life this year. Y'all have saved my life this year. Sobriety's not easy. Raise your hand if you think it's really easy. It's just not easy. Of course, it's fucking difficult. I don't like being human, and I don't like feeling things, and I don't like processes, and I don't like emotions, and I don't like stuff. So I want to bypass all of it, and I want to get to the good stuff, and I feel good all the time. I still have that ingrained in me. That's the alcoholism. That is the alcoholic thinking. I'm always going to try to take the shortcut to the good, and that's just not the way it works in life. And the good thing is now I tell people the truth about myself, and then I get the truth back to me, and I get reflected back to me the things I need to change. And even, you know, over the last 6 months, there are some things I didn't do early enough. And yet, I mean, it is what it is, because that's what I could do at the time. But it's definitely set the stage for me to be able to be more vulnerable with people I need to be more vulnerable with, and have real relationships at a deep level with my friends. And, you know, coming to meetings during this time, there was not a lot of happy, fun stuff. Like, it's not been super great. I think we go through different things. I definitely go through periods of depression, and partly because I'm prone chemically to depression. That just happens. So I know, but, you know, you all have just saved my life. Like, an hour at a time, I have just been able to sit, and it's almost like being new again, to just sit and listen to the laughter and hear your fucked up stories and, you know, like, relate to everything. And I just could not be more grateful. I could not be more grateful. And I think that's where I'll stop. I think I'm done. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. So, yeah, I got sober. And if I had an hour, I could explain all the nasty and horrible things that I'd done before sobriety, but really the miracle is in sobriety, and that's what gets me excited to talk about. So meeting one was at my home group, which was the At Your Service group in the Highlands. Adam, we jumped in his truck. He threw me in the truck, and we're like taking off to this one meeting. We show up, and there's a bunch of biker dudes and business guys out front drinking coffee and smoking cigs. And they're like, "Hey, I'm such and such." And I'm like, "Cool, I'm John. What are we doing?" And they're like, "Well, you just missed the meeting." And I'm like, "Yes, you know, time to go." And they're like, "But there's a 10 o'clock meeting that you can go to in the Highlands, which is a really cool place in Louisville. Come check it out if you can." And we rode down there, and we pulled up in this church parking lot, and this church looked really familiar to me. We got out of the church parking lot, and we went down some stairs that I had used to go down when I taught martial arts, back when I was, like, physically fit and, you know, at a young age. And I had chills going through my body. And there was a guy named Chase. He looked like a koala bear. And he was standing at the door, and he's like, "Hey, I'm Chase. I'm an alcoholic." And he had this smile on him that was indescribably wonderful. And he had something in his eye, and I didn't know what that was, but it intrigued me. And some other people wanted to shake my hand and hug me, like men wanting to hug me. And I was like, what are you doing? You know, like, I don't know what's going on right now, but okay. So I sat in the back row in the corner, and I don't remember shit from that meeting. But I heard the phrase keep coming back, and I heard a couple little messages that sounded like things that I had done about controlling drinking and stories that I had already had lived. And through this meeting, I was having chills just up and down my body, and I'm like, wow, like here I am at this place, and there's a ton of people my age here, you know? Where's all the homeless people at, you know? And it was like it was all young people. And it intrigued me, and there was a few people that was like, let me get your number. And I'm like, okay, sure. And they called me the next day, and they said something about signing a book. And I was like, okay. So I signed this book at the end of the meeting, and about a month and a half later, I found out that I was a home group member. So, you know, they explained what that was to me, and I did this stage that they say in the meetings that's like, does anybody have a burning desire? And I was the guy that just, like, I'm not going to beat on this. But I used to wail on the tables and just shit words out of my mouth. Like, Burning Desire Central was, like, my time to shine. Because, like, I didn't know how to do anything at this point of my life. You know, like waking up and like I was like sleeping all day and like detoxing and meeting, you know, like in the first, you know, couple weeks. And I just didn't know how to live, you know, but they were telling me corny things like go stack up those chairs and get here an hour early. And, you know, these people that had this thing that intrigued me, I just started doing exactly what they told me to do, basically. I was like, something's got to be better. Because they have something and I want it. This guy, Adam, and I, you know, sobriety dates together. We're going to meetings. Everything's great. We worked the Kentucky Derby one year. And I was so poor through my first year. It was ridiculous. And we made a fortune that weekend. And after that weekend, we had paychecks that we got. And he said, sign the check. And let me paint a picture real quick of Adam. Adam was like huge, muscular, MMA fighter, like psychotic, like push you through a wall type person. And pretty boy, all the women was obsessed with this guy. I mean, like he was like my idol. We're best friends for a very long time. And so I signed it because like I've been, you know, I've wrestled with Adam, and he's knocked me around a few times. So, like, I just did what he told me. And he said, we're going to go to this thing called Icky Paw. And I was like, okay, E-Paw or whatever that thing is. But he's like, we're going to go travel out of town. And we went to this, this place called Oklahoma City that, you know, like, I never traveled through drinking because, you know, I could barely travel to the bar or home from the bar. So we went, and I met people like Jeffy Paw, and a guy that had a mohawk and smoked lots of hookah, and y'all know that guy. And there was like tons and tons of people there, and they were all super young, and they were from everywhere, and like, we exchanged numbers, and I went to, like, I remember meeting this guy named Tim, and he was, like, the same age as me. And I was at a relationships panel at 4:30 in the morning, and I'm just crying my heart out about, like, I'm never going to get a girlfriend, and, like, nobody wants me. I wouldn't, you know, fuck me. And, like, I'm like, look at everything that's wrong with me. Like, I owe everyone money. That, you know, like, I can't answer the phone anymore. Like, my life is complete shit. And, like, nobody's going to ever want to date me. You know, so I'm crying my heart out to this guy, Tim, and we exchanged numbers. And, like, because I'm, you know, and at this point, like, they're like, you start building your out-of-town network besides, like, the people at home. So, like, I shared, like, a ton of stuff with my sponsor, but a lot of, like, grueling stuff. Like, I was kind of ashamed to, like, call this guy up, you know, because I got to see him all the time. So I'd call my out-of-town friends, and I'd shit on them for, like, 45 minutes on the phone because I'm like, these guys probably are never going to be sober, and they probably have as much time as me. But, you know, like, I found out Tim's got, like, 16 years of sobriety down the road. But, like, I'm like, well, shit, you know, he's been around here for a long time. But the thing with the conference is I got my first fire with Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I was doing a lot of the stuff, but like going to the dance that night and watching thousands of people jumping up and down in mosh pits and crowd surfing. I mean, it was insane. And I remember like, oh my God, this is it. This is my people. This is AA. You know, this is where I need to be. So as soon as I got sober, we had this thing called the sobriety countdown, and you know, the sea of people, and I'm standing there, and I've got like 30 days or whatever I had, and my palms are sweating and everything. I had this moment where I was on the flight back, and I was like, wouldn't it be amazing if I could put together a year? I like, what does that even look like? You know, at the point where I was at in my first year, I thought all you were full of shit. How can someone get a month? How can somebody get 6 months? There's no way that person has that much time. And when I got home, I really dug in. I was at like step one. I was, you know, cussing out my sponsor in his living room, telling him that I'm not powerless over alcohol. Like, we almost got into a fight in this man's house. And he slams open the door and he's like, go out and try some controlled drinking. And I just hit my knees and just started crying like a little girl. And I was like, yeah, you know, I mean, it says that who wants to admit, you know, that they're powerless over alcohol. And that was like the process, the beginning for me. And we went through steps 1 through 4. Or no, 1 through 3. And he stopped me and said, we're going to start a step study. And I was like, I want to get to the 4-step because everybody in Louisville's got this little technique of saying, ooh, the 4-step and all this other, you know, it's the scary 4-step. And I'm like, dude, it's paper. You know, like, I've been homeless. Like, writing on paper is not that big of a deal coming from where I came from. You know what I'm saying? So, like, we end up getting this, like, step study, and that's how I did the steps, you know. We went through this process, and, you know, we finally get to step 4, and I had all this, you know, sheets of paper, and I met this guy at a restaurant on a Sunday, and it was closed, and he was, like, the general manager was my sponsor, and we went through all that stuff, and there was a few reservations that I had, you know, about like a man that wanted to, you know, tried to molest me, you know, when I was a young child, and some other, you know, terrible things that I had done to others. And he's like, are you sure? And he kept on, you know, asking me about this. So I let it all go. I was like, you know what? Who cares? And that moment of, when he left, he's like, we're done with the fifth step. I felt like I floated out of that restaurant. Like, all that baggage that I'd been carrying for so long was like this huge relief. And I did the meditation and like, oh yeah, the drink craving got removed at like 4 months, somewhere between 4 and 6 months. And I had this moment of sobriety in this first year where I said, holy shit, I haven't thought about drinking for 3 days. Like 3 days, you know, and God had removed the craving of alcohol because like I was waiting tables and I'd carry a beer and I'd be shaking it and like throw it down and go, you know, cry like a baby to the general manager that was my sponsor. Like, I can't do this, you know, like, I want to drink the beer, you know. And and he's like, you know, like, leave or whatever, come back and, you know, get it together, go to a meeting. You know, I did tons of meetings in my first year. And I don't remember a lot. So, you know, I went to Kickapoo, which is, you know, the Kentucky State Young People's, and they said something about bidding, and nobody was there to bid on it. So there was a group of us that did that, and we worked our asses off. And throughout sobriety, currently I'm not on a Young People's committee, but every year has been a new committee or a new chapter or advisory or something like that. So, like, that was, like, the kicker because, like, you guys are my people. Like, I love meeting out-of-town people, and, like, we can relate. And, you know, like, I can be so honest with you guys. And you tell me what's going on in your life, and we continue to stay friends and, you know, and Facebook one another. And sobriety has been just amazing. So, like, after 8 months in my first year, my best friend Adam, he relapsed, and a lot of people were worried about me. His mother called me and everything else, and I was like, I don't know if I can live with him much longer. So I moved in this guy's house that, you know, chain smoked and stuff, and he had 25 or 24 years at the time, named Todd Lucky from Kentucky. And I moved in with him, and I was like, well, the odds of him getting drunk are probably a lot slimmer than Adam's. And Adam progressed, and I fought. I wanted Adam to have this thing, like, more than anything. And I tried my damnedest for him to get it, and he just couldn't get it, you know. He used to storm out of meetings and just hate what people had to say and all this stuff. And I spent so much time, and, you know, fast forwarding, he passed away April 2nd, 2010 because of this disease. So I was just, I mean, my best friend, my idol, you know, gone. It killed me, you know, it killed me. I remember the phone call. They were saying, you know, he won't come to the door because he used to lock the door. And when his child was asleep, he ended up getting engaged and having a baby and everything, and bought a house and, you know, built up the structure, tear it down, you know, constant shit. And it was super early in the morning, and his fiance was crying, saying, I can't get him. Please come. And I'm like, I'm throwing on my clothes, and I'm running out to this shitty-ass car that I was driving. And I jumped in this thing, and I'm going like 95, 100 and something down the highway. And I knew that he had passed. And I'm crying. I can barely see, and I got snot coming down my face. And then, you know, I got there, and I'm just wiping all this off. And I'm like, you know, it's time to suck it up, you know, like, and be there, you know, be there for the family. And Alcoholics Anonymous was there. The entire funeral, I mean, there was tons of people from AA there. They were supportive of the family. They were supportive of me. And, you know, and I've seen so many people pass because of this disease, man. It's no joke. And one of the reasons why, you know, like, I've stayed sober is because, you know, I take on as many suggestions, and I do a bunch of shit that I don't want to do. You know, the service work and going to meetings constantly. But it saved my life. It gave me a life beyond my wildest dreams. I still am very close with his family. You know, I can't imagine the experience that they must feel. And, you know, the anniversary of his death date is still rough. But, you know, what I've learned is what we do today is mourn. You know, it's okay to have feelings, but, you know, it's not okay really to just keep them in. So you know, there's a program for action that, you know, you guys taught me about that. So sobriety has been just simply amazing. I've been to a ton of conferences. I've went through a ton of shitty cars. You know, I've went through jobs sober, but like, and I've went through, you know, my grandmother passed. She was like my mother to me. She raised me. That was difficult, but like I had to be there for my mom, my sister, the family, you know, the friendships, the young people, you know, 17-year-old buddy of mine passed. I mean, there's just, it's just, you know, there's been a lot of rough moments, you know, I could go on and about life and sobriety and how it's had bad spots or down slopes, slippery slopes with just drama. But, you know, AA has always been there. I just take my ass and put it in the car and put it, and go to a meeting. You know, I was really surprised that you guys didn't throw me out of Alcoholics Anonymous because, you know, like the burning desire, I used to, you know, just I'd freak out. I'd call my sponsor. I'm driving on the expressway and I'm sober, you know, like, and I'm freaking out, like paranoid and just stupid shit. And you know, people told me, like, to gave me suggestions. So, like, through sobriety, like, I went back to get my GED because I got kicked out my senior year at St. X. And I got that, and my grandmother had cancer, and she couldn't really understand what was going on. But she could, but she couldn't. But I handed to her that piece of paper, and I saw a tear come to her eye. And that was just, like, worth, you know, all this, you know, pre-GED study stuff that I did. And then I spent a little time in college and got this little certificate business program that I'm pretty proud of. It's not much, but it's what I did. And today I've got, like, a great job that I love. It allows me to, you know, go to conferences, and you know, the boss of mine is in the program, so he lets me go because, like, my sobriety comes first, and I love to see my friends. So that's amazing. I've been through relationships. I stayed single for my first year. They told me to do that. I dated a few women and got into some relationships, and, you know, their ideas and my ideas were, you know, I'd find out down the road that, like, we're not hitting the same path. So it's like, hey, you know, like, that was fun, but it's, you know, it's time to move on. And I met this girl a little over a year ago, and they've got this Thunder Over Louisville, largest fireworks show in the world, supposedly. That happens every year, and there's this halfway house that throws this free barbecue for you know, tons of people in AA, and there's this girl that was there, and I'd always dated girls that were, you know, had more years of sobriety than me, that were, you know, program chicks, because, you know, it's like, well, you know, the odds are good, but the goods are odd, you know, but it's like the I might have a better chance, you know, if they're a little bit more sober than me or whatever, you know, kind of seeing where they're at in their program, where I'm at. And I met this girl, and I was, like, sworn that I'd never date a newcomer. Like, that's no-no for me. And she was sitting by herself, and there was a bunch, little group of us at the top of this hill. And I was like, hey, why don't you come over here and sit on the blanket of trust for some reason? So, like, you know, and it was kind of corny or whatever, but she's like, okay, whatever. And I was like, why don't you, what's your name? And she's like, oh, it's Maya. And I was like, well, these are all my friends, you know. They're all, you know, we're all hanging out and shit together, whatever. And I was like, this girl's pretty cool. She's, like, my age and kind of nerdy and dorky and fun, though. We had a good time. And I was, like, wanting this girl's number. So I was at the top of this hill, comes, like, straight down, and the Thunder Over Louisville had ended. They ran out of, you know, thousands of dollars worth of fireworks. So there's this huge old-timer that needed help down the hill, And I'm like wanting this girl's number. And then like, so I'm like, all right. So I grab this old timer and, you know, another guy straps his arm on the other shoulder. And I'm like, you know, trying to take him down. And then Maya just, you know, is down the hill and like off into the mist. And I'm like, no, you know, like, because I wanted this girl's number, right? So then, like, I found out who her sponsor was, and then I called her sponsor, and I was like, so you're like, sponsoring this chick named Maya, right? And she's like, yeah, and I'm like, well, can I get her number? And she's like, no, stay away from my sponsee. And I'm like, fine, I'll get it myself. So that's what I did. I got that phone number. And I called her up, and my buddy Carl in the back, superstar bonfire shindig in his backyard, and I called her up. I can't even remember. How did I get her number? Oh, I saw her in a meeting, yeah. I was like, hey, let me get that number. Cool. So I called her up, and she's like really not wanting anything to do with me, right? So I'm like, call her up, and I was like, hey, there's a bunch of these people from the thing that we're going over, and we're going to like hang out and shit. So she came, and we just, you know, it was casual. It was friendship. That's all I wanted to, like, I want to get to know this chick, you know, because I'm at a point in my life where, you know, like, I don't mess around, you know, especially with the fresh ones. No. I see how that works. I just stand back and just like, ugh. But, yeah, whatever, you know, two sickos don't make a wello or whatever they say. But, like, so, like, I we had a good time, so I took her out, like, on this kind of casual date. They had this event, this little dance at this corny token club out in the middle of nowhere that we went to. And we danced, and I act a donkey. So she, you know, because I just don't care, you know, I'm not trying to really impress anybody. So, and she had a blast. She had a blast, and we just got to know each other, and we started dating, and like she kind of gave me the first kiss, like little pop kiss, and like I fell in love with this chick, and oh yeah, I fell in love this chick, right? So like, and like talking about relationships, I want to kind of hit on this a little bit. I mean, I love this girl to death. So like we set up a boundary, you know, like until you're done working the 12 steps, like we're not fucking around. Like I'm here. And like, from a relationship side, like we basically kind of drop fist steps together. Like I threw all my shit out in the open here. This is every crook, cranny, piece of crust, nasty skank shit that I've ever done, you know? And she's just like, oh yeah, well here's blah, 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 you know? So, because, I was wanted to see where she was at, you know, like, is she real about AA? Is she going to get sober? You know, like, we're dating, and she's, like, doing service work. She's taking girls to meetings. She, you know, she's got a sponsor. She's doing the steps and all this other stuff. And it was a huge attraction to me, you know. So, like, it was like, an easy thing down the road. So, fast forward a little bit. On Mother's Day, I proposed to this chick, and she said yes after this long pause. You know, I'm like, you know, will you marry me? And she said yes. And we're getting married October 3rd this year, which was like right around the corner. So my dumbass decided, you know what? I've been working, you know, steady for a while, doing the things. I wonder how my credit, because my credit was terrible. I wonder how my credit is. And, like, she ended up totaling one of my cars. And some shopper during Christmas time ran into my minivan and totaled it out. So I had no transportation. So I actually bought this little 07 Chrysler Sebring, which was, like, the nicest car that I'd ever driven. So I got this, and I started building my credit up, and, like, it skyrocketed really quick, and I went, and I got approved for a loan for a house. I'm like, are you serious? Like, homeless drool guy that gets locked up and, like, you know, pooping on metal toilets. Like, I've got a house. I'm getting approved for a house. So, I searched. I was on this, app morning, evening, night, every day for a long time, and I found this little gym in the south end, not far from my home group. And we got it. I closed on my first home last week, like Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous has done, the materialistic stuff. It has done the relationship. It has made me a human being again. It has taught me so much in my life. It showed me how to be the son that I never was. It showed me everything. I mean, everything that I am today is because of Alcoholics Anonymous. My life, the reason why I haven't drank again is because of the life that I live today. Like, you can do anything you want in Alcoholics Anonymous as long as you don't take that first drink. Anything's possible. I mean, an idiot like me gets this GED. I go off and get some college, I get taught from my friends, how to be a better person. And, I bought a home, and, I'm getting married in, a month. And her family loves me, and I love them, and my family loves me, and everyone is supportive. And I've got this, nationwide love group, of friends, of my family. My family is Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I'm so grateful for everything that you've done for me. And if you're new, just hold on tight. Just keep coming back. It's so cliche, but it's the truth. Go to the meetings. Do the stuff that they ask you to do. It's just all suggestions. It's all suggestions. You can take it or leave it. But the thing is, just try it out. Alcohol is never going to disappear in probably our lifetime. So you can always go back to that shithole life, that I had. Maybe you haven't had that. But, we're here, and our numbers are strong, and this thing works. Just get involved, and if there's any questions, I'm sure Anna would love to talk to any one of you, after the meeting. And if you're going through anything, or I've been through a lot in sobriety and death and a lot of, relationship drama, I'd love to talk to you. I really mean it. And thank you, everyone, for being here. And I love my Louisville people, man. I'm so glad that you're with me and that we're friends. And thanks for letting me share.